Hello, welcome along to the Fun Kids Science Weekly. My name's Dan. You've found the greatest podcast in the universe. It's absolutely the only show that searches out all the secrets that are lurking about the universe and tries to unpack some of them for you. This week we've got a Mars mystery. Also, you can hear about a new creature. It's going on the Dangerous Dan list. And I tell you now, it's got my favourite name of pretty much any animal in the history of the world. That's coming up. And I've got your questions to answer this week. They're about wings, about sweat, and about birds staying safe. First, let's get a lesson from the smartest school outside of the solar system. This is Deep Space High.
Deep Space High. Space for all.
Deep Space High, the school is space. But hurry, because lessons are about to begin.
That's so lovely, Pixel. I can't believe you wrote that song yourself.
Thanks. On our planet, we communicate using music and song, so it's easy for me.
Hey, Professor Pulsar, you know you're always saying that there's a job in space for everyone. What about Pixel and her music? Could you work with music in space?
In a word, yes. Pixel, perhaps you'd like to tell us what you enjoy about music.
I like the way music makes me feel happy, calm, or excited.
Computer, play us something relaxing. It's widely known that music can have a calming effect, and for that reason, it's sometimes used during rocket launches to help astronauts relax. And because rocket launches are very loud, experts in sound technology are needed to help reduce the noise in the cockpit. Vibrations can be catastrophic if they're not kept under control, so sound or acoustic engineers, as they're known, are vital members of space exploration. Computer, NSIM. That's better. There's another place you'll find music in space. Most people have their own favourite playlists, right? Computer, give them a burst of mine.
Really?
What's wrong with a bit of country? Astronauts on the International Space Station have playlists of their own music to listen to when they're not working. Studies have shown it helps them to feel happy when they're far from home and even has a positive effect on their health.
Well, there's no other sound out there, so they might as well. Space is a vacuum, right? No sound can travel in a vacuum.
Well, you're not wrong about sounds in a vacuum. However, while space is a virtual vacuum, radio waves can be detected around planets and other objects such as comets, which we can convert to sound. And the results can be remarkable.
That's so weird.
And then music from Urch has reached further into space than almost anything else sent from the planet. Computer, bring up Voyager. The Voyager probes were launched in 1977 to explore the farthest reaches of the galaxy, and on board each of the two craft are golden records. As well as samples of Earth languages and sounds, there are several tracks of music. These crafts have travelled further than anything else, a whopping 13.9 billion miles. Who knows who's had a listen? Okay, just one more example, computer, please. In 2018, Elon Musk blasted a Tesla car into space. No one's quite sure why, to be honest. Most expensive car advert ever, if you ask me. But the car radio is playing a looped version of tracks by David Bowie.
That is kind of cool.
Music has the power to move us, change the way we feel. It can be inspiring or comforting, and tell our stories. Space has inspired music, and music is itself part of the fabric of our universe. Now, come on, Sam. Have I managed to inspire you to get musical? Can I tempt you with a trumpet?
I think I'd rather have Elon Musk's Tesla.
Well, the search for a space career will have to continue. There's a job for you in space, whatever your interest may be. Before we go, a joke. How do you make a bandstand?
I don't know. How do you make a bandstand?
Take away the chairs.
That's terrible.
All right, I'll stick to teaching you lot. Class dismissed.
Deep Space High, space for all. With support from the UK Space Agency. Find out more at funkidslive.com/space.
time for your questions then. This is where you send me little science things that are niggling around your brain, stuff that you want solving. You just can't figure out why things are the way they are. Let me know. Leave it as a review over on Apple Podcasts. I will do all the digging and I will answer your question. First one today comes from Peregrine P, who says, how do wings and feathers let birds stay in the air? Now, a bird's wing has two big features, feathers and strong muscles. The feathers help trap the air and it helps push it downwards. The muscle also does that. It forces that air down and that thrusts the birds upwards. It helps lift them a little bit. It really helps that the bird has a very light body. Now, when a bird is already flying, when it's speeding through the sky, the wings, they're slick and they're smooth. And they make the air rushing towards the bird lift over the top of the wing quickly. This is similar to how a plane stays in the air. It forces the air over the wing much faster than it does underneath. This means there's more air underneath the wing than there is on top, so it lifts upwards. It's a complicated idea. Thrust and lift and kind of drag, really, and how things fly. It's all to do with creating an empty space, a vacuum above the wing, and then that lifts it higher into the sky, Peregrine. Thank you for the question. This one comes from Thomas, who's in Preston, who wants to know, how does sweat make your body cool down? Now, you know when you're exercising and you're getting really hot, your body needs to cool down to help keep going, to make sure you don't overheat. It needs to lose some of that warmth that the energy is making. Now, water doesn't do too well in heat. I mean, just imagine a desert. There's no real water there, is there? It's because the sun makes heat, which evaporates the water and it turns it into a gas. That's pretty much what's happening with your sweat. When you get hot, you make this water, this liquid sweat, which rises to your skin and then it evaporates into a gas. It uses some of the heat from the body to do that. It takes it away. It draws warmth from your organs and the muscles to the top of your skin. It evaporates the sweat, which helps you cool down. Now, some animals can't sweat properly, so they've got to be creative. I mean, think of your dog. If it's hot, probably always jumping in puddles, right? Elephants and hippos, they cover themselves in muddy water to use some of its body heat to evaporate that water and then to cool down, just like we do with sweat. And lastly, this week, it's from Henry. I think we've covered this before, but I'll run through it again. This is Henry says, how come birds can sit on electric wires and not get electrocuted? Now, it's because electricity, it always wants to take the quickest journey to get back to ground. And the metal that electric fences are made out of, it's a better conductor of electricity than the bones inside a bird. So the easiest, the quickest thing for the electricity to do is just to carry on traveling along the wire, to go around that, to go back into Earth, to complete the circuit without taking a detour all the way through the niggling bones of a bird. That's why they can perch on wires overhead. I guess imagine you're in a car heading home and you want to get there quickly. You could take a straight, quick, direct road, or you could turn off and go on a winding, twisting route that adds more time. You'll probably take the straight, quick one, right? That's exactly what happens with electricity. It wants to get back home to Earth quickly, and a metal wire helps it do that. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, there is so much to keep you busy at the Science Museum. They've got all sorts, including an exhibition that looks at 3,000 objects from medicine through the years all over the world. And to tell us more about just generally what they've got going on at the Science Museum, Rebecca Raven is an assistant curator at the Science Museum Groups, and she joins us now. Hey, Rebecca.
Hello, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Now, Science Museum must be an amazing place to curate, to look after, to constantly look for new things that you can put in it. I know that you're going to tell us about some of the stuff that's there, but just tell us more about what an assistant curator does.
Yeah, absolutely. So I help to care for thousands of objects on behalf of the nation at the Science Museum, which is one of the world's most significant collections of science, technology, engineering, and medicine. This involves all sorts, so researching objects, measuring them, writing about them, and coming on podcasts like this one to talk about them.
Ah, well, thank you very much for that. What a part of your job. Now, so there's a few things that the Science Museum takes care of. Now, they've got a lot of science-y stuff there, obviously. Just tell
Absolutely.
Us more about some of the kind of science that we can see actually at the museum.
So we have a lot of space science primarily at the Science Museum. A beautiful big space gallery, very dark when you walk in, very much like space. But the first object that I wanted to talk about isn't actually on display. So it's a little bit of a behind the scenes sneak peek. And it has been into space. It's not as glamorous as a spacesuit or delicious as space food. I'm not sure if I'd actually quite enjoy it, but it's actually a space toilet.
I've got so many questions.
Thought you might.
Just kind of tell us how a space toilet might be different from a normal toilet.
Right. So the main feature is that there isn't any gravity on board spaceships. So you can't use a normal toilet like we do on Earth because everything would just float back out again. Instead, they have to use a certain level of suction to make sure all the waste gets to the right place, doesn't spill out and float around the living quarters of the space module. You can't just open a window in space if it gets a bit smelly. So it's actually a really important piece of space equipment.
I'm looking at a picture online right now. You can go on Collection, the Science Museum Group's website, and you can see this. Is it the Soyuz Mir space toilet? Is that one?
That's it. Yeah, that's the one. So it went up into space on the Russian Soyuz Mir space station for a couple of years. And I've actually seen that the astronaut Clayton C. Anderson, who used this toilet, he's done a bit of an interview and he's described his experience of using the toilet as imagining you were riding a bucking bronco at the rodeo, which doesn't really sound like the most pleasant toilet experience to me. If you can see from the picture, it does come with a handle. So you've kind of got to cling on and maneuver it around yourself. So it's not like an Earth toilet, which is built into the wall, stuck to the floor. You can kind of move it around wherever you need to be moving it to.
What always amazes me about things from the past, like high-tech things from the past, like this would have been in the 1970s, is that they do all look like something a very, very terrifying monster has in Doctor Who, don't they? Like, this is exactly what this looks like. Amazing. So we can see that at the Science Museum, an actual space toilet. What else is it? It's just got quite a lot of technology and engineering things there as well.
Yes. So the second object I wanted to talk about is a bit more technology and engineering based. So when you think of engineering, you might think of really high-tech devices and big buildings and bridges, but engineering can be as small and everyday as things that you find in the home. Saying that, I've just mentioned that engineering can be small, but my next object isn't a very good example of this because it's actually a really massive vacuum cleaner. So again, I'm sure we can have a look at pictures online, but it's basically, if you picture the size of about a small car, that's around about the size of Booth's vacuum cleaner from 1985.
This is not. So I know that when you're listening, you might not be looking at the pictures online, so I'm going to have to describe it to you. It honestly looks like something you would imagine people way back in the past would kind of cart around sweets in. It's like this big kind of like van, like a tall lorry that you might have seen as like if you imagine maybe an old school caravan. That is what this, like, how is this? It's bright red. It's got what looks like a tank on the front of it. How was this a vacuum cleaner? How have we come so far in just a few years, well, 100 years?
So obviously vacuum cleaners are a lot smaller today, and we can use them inside of the home. But this one was designed to be wheeled up to your house by a horse, and the big tube would go in through your window. So I'll do a little bit of background. So engineer Hubert Cecil Booth, he used to spend his time designing bridges and fairground ferris wheels. So those big machines that we think about when we think of engineering. However, in 1901, he saw a machine at a fair that completely inspired him. And it was a machine that blew air out in the hope of kind of getting dust out of the carpet, which could then be collected into a bag. And he realised that was a bit silly. It's a lot harder to collect dust that's floating around in the air than to kind of suck it straight into a bag. But he was actually told that this was impossible to do. So he did a few disastrous kind of experiments involving placing a handkerchief over his mouth to act as a filter. Then he tried to suck up dust from the arm of a chair himself, which did cause him to choke. I would definitely not recommend doing this at home if you want to help out with the housework. But despite this, he came up with this big red tank on wheels and kind of rolled it around London. Only the really rich could afford to get their houses vacuumed. The actual cost of hiring it was the same as a whole year's wage for a junior domestic maid. And these maids would be the ones who would be cleaning the carpets normally. So before vacuum cleaners, you'd be kind of beating and scrubbing carpets to get them clean. But these rich people that could afford this new technology really used it to show off. So you can't really imagine inviting your friends and neighbours round to show off your new vacuum cleaner. But neighbours in kind of the beginning of the 1900s, you wouldn't be able to miss a gigantic horse-drawn vacuum cleaner showing up outside the house. And everybody would have to be very impressed with how much money you had if you were wealthy enough to get one of these Booth machines in.
Earlier how... things always look like they're from Doctor Who, but also but also old names always sound like they're very old names. I know that sounds really silly, but Hubert Cecil Booth, is that what his name
was? Hubert Cecil Booth, very prestigious, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he made this in what, 1905? You can't imagine anyone after 1906 was ever called Hubert Cecil Booth. So I know we're looking at these pictures online, but you've got them at the Science Museum as well. So if you'd like to go and check it out, you'll need to get yourself down there. You've also got, I mentioned earlier, like 3,000 different objects from the world of medicine that you've looked at over the past few years. Just tell us about those.
Absolutely. So I've actually got two to talk about today, both on display, so you can come and have a look at them if you want. But the first one is Jedi MRI helmets. So named after Star Wars, they look almost like the helmets that the Jedi Knights would wear. Again, if you're picturing it, it's a bit like a bike helmet with loads of thick copper tubes circling around it. However, these Jedi helmets are not actually from a galaxy far, far away, and instead were used in Hammersmith Hospital in London in the early 1980s. They were to complete MRI scans. So MRI stands for magnetic resonance imaging, and it's used to see inside of the body. And in this case, it's actually used to see inside the brain. MRI scans work by using big magnets to change the direction that the atoms in our body spin. And these big copper coils on the helmets would be used to pick up these signals and make a nice picture on a computer. They're called Jedi helmets because it can be quite frightening to go into a hospital to get checked over by a doctor when you're not very well. And these Jedi helmets helped to encourage people to put them on and made the appointment seem a lot less scary. They were being kind of trialed in just when the Return of the Jedi film came out in 1983. So linking them to the new Star Wars film helped children and adults focus on something else and took their mind off any potentially scary illnesses. The doctors who actually designed these practiced on their own children to see how people would react to them.
Do we still use these now? Do we still use a version of this now?
So technology's come on quite a lot since the 1980s. So these were just prototypes and we don't really use helmets like these anymore. But they are quite fun, aren't they? A couple of them even have stickers on saying like astronaut. So I think if I was going in for potentially a bit of a scary kind of hospital appointment, I'd quite enjoy putting on a helmet that says astronaut. So frankly, I think they should bring them back.
I know you. It's not just the Jedi helmet that you've got from the medicines to tell us about. What's the last one there, Rebecca?
Oh, so the last one. I know we're probably all a bit tired about talking about health epidemics and vaccines, but back in the first half of the 1900s, there was another virus going round, and this leads us on to our last object, which is the iron lung. So The iron lung was used to treat polio, which is a horrible virus which can lead to muscle paralysis. So the chest muscles not working properly, and it makes it really difficult for patients to breathe on their own. But luckily, researchers at the Harvard University in America came up with a solution, which was this big, huge metal box on wheels that the polio patient would have to lie down in with only their head sticking out. So the airtight chamber would be pumped full of air in order to help the person inside breathing. It would have been quite a scary thing to be in quite a lot of pain and see this
scary
big metal contraption.
It looks like a coffin, Rebecca. It looks like a big bug-like coffin. It would be terrifying.
It would be so scary. It's very similar to a coffin just kind of wheeled out towards you. But I think the main thing, so when you're inside and you're starting to breathe a bit more comfortably, I think the main thing you have to worry about is boredom. So you're just stuck in this big tank. Your whole body's inside, apart from your head. So you couldn't even blow your own nose. You have to rely on some very patient nurses to lend a hand and a hanky. You could have read a book if it was suspended in front of your face, but somebody would have had to have turned the pages for you. These days, you could probably stick a tablet up there so you could watch some TV. But luckily, we don't have to worry about polio anymore, thanks to vaccines. So the only time that you'll have to see an iron lung is in person in our museum rather than in the hospital.
we're thankful for that. And that's just what, four things there that's going on at the Science Museum. Mm-hmm. And they've got loads, as I said, 3,000 things just in medicine. There's so much going on. And Rebecca Raven helps look after them. Rebecca, thank you so much for telling us all about what you've got at the Science Museum.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Now, this week, we are putting a creature on the Dangerous Dan list who I think might have my favourite name of any beast ever. It's the giant desert hairy scorpion. I love it. No creativity in that. Come on. The giant desert hairy scorpion. What is it? Where's it from? What does it look like? Yeah, let's do that. Let's just call it that. We don't need to be inventive here. Let's call it the giant desert hairy scorpion. Call it what it is. It's one of the largest scorpions in the world. You find it in North America, where it roams around the deserts from the USA to Mexico. Now, it's yellowish, with a darkened top. It's got pincers that are quite thick, quite long, a bit like a crab's. It's got little brown hairs all over as well, and these sense vibrations in the ground. It lets the scorpion know what's going on. Are there other animals about? Is it a predator? Is it prey? Now, they're aggressive. They wander at night, where it's a bit cooler, looking for food under rocks that they can eat. And it's got a vicious sting, too. It's not so bad as other creatures we've had on the list, but when you think about how big this animal is, one of the largest scorpions ever, it's not that awful. It hurts a bit like a bee sting, but you can get a reaction to it. It swells part of your body up. It might make it hard to breathe, and it'll hurt for ages. That's all what's happening with the giant desert hairy scorpion. A fantastic name for one of the biggest scorpions in the world, which goes straight onto our Dangerous Dan list. It's time to learn about some more devastating beasts now. We're travelling back in time for these ones, back to the age of the dinosaurs.
Imagine going back in time, not 100 years or 1,000 years, but millions of years. To the age of the dinosaur. Welcome to the end of the Cretaceous period, around 65 million years ago. Around this time, there were more dinosaurs than ever before. The world was crowded with groups of Triceratops, duck-billed Edmontosaurus, squawking birds, and a wide variety of plant and sea life. The end of the Cretaceous period is also where you'd find one of the best-known dinosaurs of them all, Tyrannosaurus Rex.
He's coming this way! Quick, run!
You'd definitely want to run from a T-Rex. His name means King of the Tyrant Reptiles. And he was a terrifying meat-eating dinosaur found in the continent that is now North America. This carnivore was massive at over 12 meters long and 6 to 7 tons in weight. He gouged at prey with his enormous jaws, and his curved teeth made it hard to escape. Despite standing as tall as an elephant, T-Rex's brain wasn't much bigger than a loaf of bread. However, a cast from a fossilized T-Rex skull shows the parts in charge of his sense of smell were bigger than in other reptiles.
Ugh, what's that horrible smell?
That's the smell of rotting meat. A T-Rex could sniff out a carcass from over a kilometer away. It might not have been as tasty as fresh meat, but it was an easy meal.
Quick, another T-Rex is coming.
That's not a T-Rex, but it's still good to hide. That's a Tabasaurus batar, or T. batar. Tabasaurus came from Asia, not North America, but had a lot in common with T-Rex. They looked similar and were both top predators. Scientists think they're closely related, even though they lived on the other sides of the world. Some have even suggested that they might be the same species. But there were differences. Lab tests show that Tabasaurus had a less flexible jaw, so he might have preferred carcasses to hunting wriggling prey. And whilst T-Rex had eyes that faced forward, Tabasaurus had more sideways-facing eyes.
Oh no! I think he's looking at me!
I think he's more interested in that herd of hadrosaurs over there. When hunting, he'd prefer to pick off the old, young, or sick members of a herd. But let's not hang about.
Paleontology. Pick.
The age of the dinosaurs came to an end 65 million years ago. It is thought that a giant asteroid 6 miles across smashed into the Earth, where the town of Chicxulub in Mexico now sits, triggering tsunamis and dust clouds that blotted out the sun. Plants could not grow. Animals were cold and hungry and began to die. From the seas to the skies, many creatures and plants disappeared forever. In fact, 7 out of every 10 species perished. The age of the dinosaurs had gone, and with it 200 million years of the most amazing creatures the world has ever seen. Thanks to paleontologists, we know much about what it was like, but there are many mysteries that remain. Maybe one day, you will make a new discovery yourself.
Right, let's do this week's Science in the News. We're starting with a Mars mystery. Scientists are trying to work out what happened to a bit of rock that was on Mars. A few months ago, the Perseverance rover, it's on Mars right now, on the red planet, it picked up some rock. We spoke about it on this show. Now, when experts went back to look for it in the tube where they thought it was, they used a camera from here on Earth up to Mars. It wasn't where it was meant to be. It had gone missing. Nothing was there. They think at the moment that perhaps it had disintegrated unexpectedly. But they're doing more tests, more investigations to figure out what's happening. Also, a company called Virgin Hyperloop have released a video showing how they're planning to help people travel by pods at 600 miles an hour. This will use magnetic levitation, the same things that the Japanese use on their maglev trains that go so fast. The pods will travel in a line on a track that will be like a vacuum, so it helps it get somewhere extremely quickly. It's just an idea at the moment, but they're hoping to make them. And finally, a leading astrophysicist from Northern Ireland has been awarded the world's oldest science prize. Dame Jocelyn Bell Burnell is only the second woman to be awarded the Copley Medal. She was part of a team that discovered the pulsar star. We spoke about these on the show recently, actually. They're rapidly spinning stars that look like they blink, and they help explain some of the secrets of the universe. This happened years ago, and Dame Burnell is finally getting this medal that she deserves. And that is it for this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for listening. If you came to our live show, by the way, a few days ago, thank you so much for coming down. I thought we had a brilliant time. I thought we uncovered some secrets of the universe. If you missed that, keep your eyes peeled, keep listening. Hopefully we'll do some more in the future as well. If you want to get in touch with the show, if you want to hear any science podcasts that we do, loads more podcasts like this as well, you've got that on the free Fun Kids app over on Apple Podcasts and at funkidslive.com. And Fun Kids are a children's radio station from the UK. You can hear us all around the country on your DAB digital radio on that free Fun Kids app and at funkidslive.com.